Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So riding in the car today, hit a bump that I wish wasn't there. Bought my wife a new car. It's one of those, spent a lot of money on it. And every time we hit one of these gigantic bumps, it's like, that's going to cost me money. Every time we hit one, I start thinking about how much the alignment is going to cost, how much new tires are going to cost, how much damage is being done to this, her dream vehicle, because we haven't invested in our infrastructure. And now's the time. Please, because, I don't want to have to pay this stuff. And here to share some thoughts on why we need to invest in our infrastructure outside of my minor self-interest, I've asked Trevor Higgins to come talk with us. He's a senior director of domestic climate and energy policy at the Center for American Progress, their website, AmericanProgress.org. Trevor, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick. It's a pleasure to be here.
Like I said, outside of my minor trivial front-end alignment problems, the country's got real problems when you look at infrastructure. I think something like 173,000 miles of road like I'm driving on, something like, 45,000 bridges, transit systems that are broken, waterways, airports, you name it, we got problems.
Yeah, that's right. And I would add to your litany, we've got lead pipes that need to be replaced. We've got a manufacturing base that is stuck in the last century and needs to get ready to compete. And we've got infrastructure is so much more than just the roads and bridges. Not only have we got the backlog there, we have to get to work building an economy that's going to work for the decades to come. No. Or else we're going to be in trouble.
No, you're right. The one year when I worked in Harrisburg, it was like the sinkhole capital of the world. There were like 45 sinkholes in the city when I was there. And it was like buses, the whole rear ends of buses being swallowed up, garbage trucks, anything driving down the road, just falling through the ground. And it's because of our infrastructure. It's because the sewer lines are like 125 years old. They're clay pipes that are cracking and the water is just eroding things away. And they've known about this since the 70s and just have never had the political will or who's going to pay for it to get it done. And now, fortunately, we might have a president and an actual plan to get some of that accomplished.
Yeah. On the one hand, we have an entire economy that essentially needs to be rebuilt from the ground up to fix the infrastructure, to fix the energy systems, to stop grids from failing, to prepare for climate change. All of this stuff has to happen. On the other hand, we've got 9 million people out of work. So it's I think the genius of this plan is to say, let's solve both those problems at once. Interest rates are essentially zero. We've got free money. All we have to do is decide what are the right projects and how do we get the right people doing them? How do we give them good wages, make sure it's unionized, and get to work? I think this is there's a lot of good that can come from just breaking free the shackles of fear about deficits or debts, and they actually look at what's the payback. If we spend money now, we get back an economy that functions that's going to carry us forward for decades to come.
Ultimately, you can look at this pandemic as kind of a silent blessing, and I don't want to go that far, but it's made us address a number of problems immediately that have been around for decades that we've just kind of kept pushing to the back burners. But I think this is that moment. And I think Joe Biden, while he wasn't my first choice, he is rising to the moment in a way that I'm pleased with. Would I've liked to have seen this bill that they've proposed be much bigger? Absolutely. But this is a good start.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's got all of the right building blocks. And I think there's room to spend more productively in a lot of these places. And if Congress wants to pay for it, I think there's ways to pay for it. If Congress wants to borrow, this is silly, maybe it's too old, but the Erie Canal, that was paid for on bonds. And I'm from Buffalo, New York. That made my city. Here I am 200 years later. And the entire economy of Buffalo was built because of that one canal. And that's this kind of forward-looking vision that we have to have right now. And we're just not going to get that many bites at the apple. If we can't get this stuff fixed, we can't get working, the American workers aren't going to be able to compete with like global international pressures, if the industry of America isn't ready to put them to work. And that means a transition to kind of the way of the future here.
No, it's an excellent point. And look, there's an opportunity to change the way we do things. You talk about electric cars, we don't have the infrastructure for it. This is an opportunity to build that infrastructure that we need to move to that next generation of transportation. But here's a problem. We don't have the kind of workers that I think we need. I think our economy for a very long time has been moving us towards a service-based economy. Thank you, Ronald Reagan. As we were giving away our manufacturing, as we were destroying what productive capacity we have, we got a bunch of people who can push papers around, but not many people who can swing a hammer. So we got all these projects, we got the money for it, but do we have the people to be able to do this work?
Yeah. Well, I think you're right that a lot of people do. I mean, there are some good service jobs out there, and they could be better, and they would be better if they were unionized. And, you know, part of what this plan talks about is how to make sure that we're supporting the kind of care workers that are doing real work to support, you know, our grandparents.
And our human infrastructure, right.
So that matters too. But there, you're right, there's just so much actual physical infrastructure we also have to build. I mean, part of what's in this plan is billions of dollars for training, for matching people up, and for building the manufacturing capacity in the communities that need it. Places that were dependent on fossil fuel extraction have people who can do this work, and we can put a new manufacturing plant to build heat pumps there that are going to provide zero emission heating for everyone's home in America. And we can build the battery manufacturing plants that we need for electric vehicles in the places that, you know, have the workers already ready to go. And, you know, it's not like magic. It's just money. If we can spend the money to build the manufacturing capacity we need here, then we can compete with the money that China is pouring in and that Europe is pouring in farsightedly to prepare for the way of the future here.
Yeah, but Trevor, we're broke. Yeah. Haven't you heard?
Right. We can't possibly spend any money. Congress
no, we spent it all on the last guy.
Yeah, well, I mean, if Congress can spend $2 trillion like that, I mean, literally overnight in handwritten bill, like they couldn't even take the time to type that bill. They were writing it in by hand on the floor to pass a tax cut bill for corporations and the wealthy. I'm pretty confident that we can find the wherewithal to actually pay for the investments we need.
Now, the thing that I like about Biden's plan is he actually did figure out a way to pay for it. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact that we haven't been taxing corporations the way we should. In fact, I think the numbers they gave, 91 of the Fortune 500 companies in 2018 paid zero taxes, which is just disgraceful. And I forget, the average of the Fortune 500 was like 8%, well below the 21 that it was, and certainly well below the 28 that it should be, or the 35 that it was before Trump, or the 56% it was back in 1953.
Exactly.
But there's an opportunity to get some money to invest in our infrastructure so those businesses can thrive.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the president has proposed to raise the corporate tax rates, not even to the level they were 10 years ago. Right? Well, this is just putting it back to a reasonable rate and fixing the international loopholes that let like this pharmaceutical company hide $1 trillion of profit overseas in Ireland. It's just it's time to end those shell games and actually pay for what we need to make American industry and American workers, you know, have a future.
Now, I tell all my conservative friends who, you know, they're against tax and spend liberals. And I say, look, I'm a proud tax and spend liberal. I'm fiscally responsible. We need to fix our roads and bridges. We need better broadband access, especially in rural areas like where I live. We need better airports. We need better, you name it. We need to upgrade, but we also got to pay for it. In my household, when I need to get something fixed, we borrow money, we pay it back. That's how we should be doing things. And Biden has figured out a way to do this. We just didn't put it on the credit card like we did with the tax cuts.
Yeah, I thought that McConnell's statement about this was kind of funny. He said that he's all for infrastructure, but not if we have to raise taxes to pay for it, and not if we have to borrow to pay for it. So how exactly are we supposed to pay for it? How much do you really like infrastructure?
Magic dust.
Yes.
Well, no, because if you remember, Republicans, you know, a couple of years ago, They were all in favor of a $2 trillion infrastructure plan. In fact, they, a lot of them who are against it now were all in favor of it back then. But Trump seemed to get them to believe that he had this magic plan somewhere tucked away, like his health care plan, in a secret box somewhere that would solve all these problems and wouldn't have to raise taxes or pay for it. He just had some magic. And we had lots of weeks with cute pictures of him holding on the steering wheels. And, you know, we had lots of good photo ops. Exactly. But, you know, you got to pay for this stuff, right?
Yeah, well, that's right. I think that those infrastructure weeks that became a joke during the Trump years were mostly a talking point. People thought the word infrastructure sounded nice, so they said it. And that's not what we're talking about right now. I mean, this plan that President Biden put forward is real. He said it in his speech. He's not tinkering around the edges.
For me, the word infrastructure means jobs, and not just any job. It means good union jobs. Mm-hmm. Which have good health care and good retirement security and safe working conditions and a voice on the job and all of those things. So, you know, before Joe Biden became president, I was calling for a couple of things. One, fire Peter Robb on day one, which he did. Nice job, Joe. And to include the PRO Act in an infrastructure bill, which he also did. Nice job, Joe, number two. So I'm going to keep saying things that I want because I'm hoping he'll keep doing it. But having the PRO Act in this is just as important as any other component, because people's lives have to get better from the work that they're doing. As our communities get better, so should people's lives.
Yeah, that's right. And also in here are requirements that the funding come with Buy America provisions, that the funding come with prevailing wage requirements, that the new tax incentives for renewables, which is the future, we have to build so much renewable power. And we have incentives in here to give more money to the companies that are unionized than the ones that aren't. That's going to transform this industry. And in the absence of that, you know, it won't. So we're going to build that power one way or the other. I think we should build faster. And I think we should build it with union workers. And this is the key to doing that. So there are a lot of pieces in here. I mean, the training I already mentioned, the workforce development funding, the targeted investments in new capacities in the areas that need it. There's a lot.
No, and this is the weird thing. We need a lot. And I often bring up Thomas Friedman, who I'm not a huge fan of, but he had a great line, and I give him credit for it every time I say it. He said he came from China back to LAX, and it was like coming from the Jetsons to the Flintstones. I don't necessarily like being the Flintstones.
Agreed.
So we need to do much better if we're going to compete with China, because we've given them our manufacturing base. If we're going to be competitive for the next generation of jobs, if we're going to be competitive in controlling what happens around the globe, we better start doing this stuff and soon.
Yeah, think about what happened with photovoltaics, the solar panels. We had an American manufacturing base. We had American-driven technology. We had research and development coming out of the national labs, driving down the cost of these panels. And we kind of fell asleep at the switch. And China invested a bunch of money in its manufacturing capacity. And now they produce all the solar panels. And it's not hard to see where things are going. Like, we know that electric vehicles are coming. And we know they're going to need batteries. And we're watching China start to make the same playbook to invest their money and build in the battery manufacturing capacity.
No, they've written the book. They've given us the book. The China 2025 plan is the book. We know what they're going to do. They're going after aerospace, robotics, electric vehicles. They're going after all of the jobs of the future. They're no longer going to put up with doing the crappy, dirty manufacturing that they stole from us. Or I'm sorry, they didn't steal it. We gave to them.
Right. We can't let them take that again. So all we got to do is invest in the capacity to build those batteries here so that we've got the electric future that we're leading the future on the electric vehicles that we know are coming.
Yeah. So last line of questioning I've got, because look, we've had a big love fest. This is fantastic. It's going to do good things. It's going to put people back to work. It's going to be fabulous. It's going to be transformational. We're going to rebuild our economy. It's going to be a different economy. It's going to be a just economy, all that stuff. Yeah. Is it going to pass?
Yeah. I mean, that's up to Congress. I think we have heard good things, and there's, you know, like we said before, Republicans like to say the word infrastructure, but so far they've said no. The president's put this out there and they've said, no, that's not what we mean. Pipes for black people, no, they can drink lead. That doesn't count as infrastructure. And that's not going to cut it. And what I heard the president say in his speech in Pittsburgh was, you know, he's willing to work with any Republican when good faith wants to get this done, but we have to get it done. And that list of proposals there, if they want to pass that through reconciliation, they can do that. And we can do this with or without the Republicans in the Senate. If they aren't going to do this in good faith to negotiate, that's fine. There's still a way to do this. So I'm optimistic. I think the need is to have this passed by summertime. And I think Congress has every tool available to them to do it. I think the more money that they put on the table, the more needs they'll be able to address, the easier it will be to put together a bill. And I hope that it covers everything from the clean energy sector to transit to clean water, kind of the full scope of what we need. Because this isn't like a nice to have thing. It's not just a way out of a quick fix for our current problems. If we don't build for the future that's coming, we're going to be caught flat-footed, and we're going to be suffering with kind of continued unjust pollution and concentrated in communities, destabilizing climate, and with jobs that can't compete globally. So this is urgent. Like, the time is now.
No, I'm right there with you. And this, for me, is that moment. You know, I think back to my grandparents' generation. They left a legacy for their grandchildren and their great-grandchildren. They built an infrastructure. They left something behind. The last couple of generation hasn't done, they haven't done that. This, to me, is that opportunity. But I gotta throw this at you. I just want to get your reaction to the South Dakota governor, Kristi Noem, who said, "I was shocked by how much doesn't go into infrastructure." She said it goes into research and development. It goes into housing and pipes. Evidently, housing and pipes in her world, not infrastructure.
Yeah, I thought I was kind of alluding to that before because I thought it was so hilarious. It's such nonsense. Like, if we're pipes are infrastructure. The way you get your water to your house, that's infrastructure. The way you drive to your house, that's infrastructure. The way the lights turn on in your house, that's infrastructure. It's part of our society. It's what our economy is built on. It's what our lives depend on.
Yep. But Trevor, I appreciate you taking some time for us, sharing your thoughts on this. And I'm hoping we get something through. I'm hoping this happens. And as it does, I hope you'll come back and talk to us again.
That's my pleasure. Thank you, Rick.
Good stuff. Trevor Higgins, Senior Director of Domestic and Climate and Energy Policy there at the Center for American Progress. AmericanProgress.org, the website. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. Listen to The Rick Smith Show.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.